This is Dr. Jimmy Nichols, equine nutritionist. On this podcast, we will explore unique cases, debunk popular myths, and break down advanced research data. Join me for a little fun, a lot of science, and some real-world advice for feeding horses. Hey everyone, it's Dr. Jimmy. Thanks for tuning in to episode 37 of Feed Room Chemist. The episode today is going to be a listener questions episode. I have started to get kind of a backlog of questions that have been sent in. I don't mean that in a bad way at all. I love the fact that so many of you are sending in questions, giving me ideas for topics, and then also just kind of asking me questions that you want me to address on the episode that I think will also benefit a lot of other horse owners. So the questions today are all going to be a little bit kind of around the same theme or the same topic. They're basically going to be around forage management, pasture management, types of hays that might be have a tendency to cause colic, and then what you can do as a horse owner to kind of navigate through all of those situations. So let's just dive right in. The first question was sent in by Jamie, and she says, does feeding coastal hay to horses actually increase the risk of colic? Coastal is the most popular form of hay in the area where I live and also the most economical option, but I've heard that Bermuda grass hays can cause horses to have impaction and colic. Is this true? And if so, why? All right. That is a great question, Jamie, and one that I think a lot of horse owners battle with. They've heard it, but then at the same time, they hear that coastal or Bermuda grass hay can cause colic, but then they turn around and they just look around them and they see how many horses are eating it and don't seem to have any problems. So I get how that can be a very confusing situation for most of us. The truth of the matter is coastal hay is a type of Bermuda grass hay. And coastal has slightly thinner or finer stems, and that can make it more likely to cause colic or impaction in a horse that then causes colic. So horses that eat coastal are maybe at a slightly higher risk of having impaction colic, but I would say that it has more to do with how that horse is being maintained, and then also the quality of that hay itself. Okay, so let's talk the quality of the hay itself. During the peak growing season, you know, ideally if you're harvesting coastal hay, you would be cutting that hay every 21 days. So every 3 weeks, they should be doing a new cutting of that hay. And if you stay on that rotation and that schedule through that peak growing season, you can rest pretty sure that the nutritional quality of that hay is going to be good. You're going to have a lower NDF content, so neutral detergent fiber. Basically, that's a lab analysis that tells us how much of that hay is not able to be digested by that horse. So if you are buying your coastal hay from a supplier that is maybe cutting in intervals that are longer than that 21-day period, you know, the longer you go past that 21 days, basically the more mature that grass gets. And the more mature it gets, the more lignin or indigestible content starts to accumulate. It's the structural component of that grass. So, you know, if it, and the only way to truly know what the NDF content or what that non-digestible component is to have it sent off and tested by a lab. I think I've mentioned before, I really like to use Equa Analytical, and they're just, they're pretty quick. The cost is relatively inexpensive, and they report the numbers in horse values. So that's the part that I like the most. But, you know, generally, for those of you that have had your hay tested or you're trying to decipher a hay analysis, you know, generally, if that hay has an NDF value between 40 to 50%, that would be considered a pretty good quality hay for horses. And if you get over that 60 to 65% range, I mean, if you're in that that range, that's a pretty big red flag that hay's got a pretty good, a large portion of indigestible content. And in fact, if you get much up over, 65 or more, a lot of times horses just flat won't eat the hay because there's just a lot of bulk to it. There's a lot of indigestible content and it just doesn't taste that good. So, if all of a sudden maybe you got a new load of hay in and you notice that the horses are not eating this particular load as well as they did the load before, it'd be interesting for you to test that hay and see what that NDF content is, because it's possible that maybe that load of hay was cut at a more mature state, and that can certainly affect how much those horses are willing to eat. So that's the first thing you have to be have to consider when you're feeding coastal hay. But to me, feeding Bermuda grass hay really only becomes a concern when, if you're not maintaining your horse's teeth appropriately, okay? If they're having a hard time chewing and breaking down that hay, that can definitely set them up for an impaction colic, right? If they're, and so it may be that they're not able to chew that hay appropriately because their teeth haven't been maintained. So a good schedule just for you guys to know is at least every 12 months, you should have your horse's teeth floated, looked at by a equine veterinarian or, a certified equine dentist. If you have a horse that maybe is parrot mouthed or, has some kind of abnormality within those teeth, you're going to want to keep that time frame a little bit tighter. So on those horses, I typically recommend that you get them looked at every 6 months. But how well a horse chews that hay and breaks that hay down in their mouth before they ever swallow it is one of the biggest things that is going to impact how that hay behaves throughout the rest of the digestive tract. Another thing that horses will do sometimes that can cause, let's say their teeth are in really good condition, the alignment is all up to par, you've kept their mouth maintained very well. There are some horses that bolt their feed. They're really aggressive when they go to eat their hay. Maybe they're competing with another horse, or they just have that aggressive eating behavior for whatever reason. If those horses are eating and chewing too fast and swallowing prematurely or swallowing before that hay has been fully broken down and chewed to its best capacity, those horses are going to be more likely to deal with impaction colics. So, I think, it's important to remember that impaction colic can happen with any kind of hay. Okay. So and especially if the horse is becoming a little bit dehydrated. So the winter months, is a time where I think a lot of times people forget, horses don't actually love to drink icy water. Okay. They like cool, clean, fresh water. They do not like really cold water. So if you live in the northern climate or even in the southern climates, the water temperature can get pretty cold. And those horses a lot of times will back off and not want to drink. And that's when those horses, they'll start to become just slightly dehydrated. May not even be enough that you can even really notice from like the skin pinch test or things like that. But it's dehydrated just enough that it can cause an impaction. So I don't think I have ever told anybody to avoid feeding Bermuda grass hay, because, it's not necessarily the hay itself that causes colic. It's generally other factors that are not addressed to begin with that allow that Bermuda grass to impact more easily, than something like alfalfa or a thicker stem. So what I tell people is, if you're feeding horses, period, but especially if you're feeding Bermuda grass, make sure you keep the teeth floated. So every 6 to 12 months, depending on your horse, make sure that you're giving them cool, clean, fresh water, not icy water. Okay. If you live in the northern climates and you can put a water heater in to keep the ice off of it, that is preferred. If you have a horse that eats really fast or doesn't chew very well or competes, is always in competition mode, if you have that kind of horse, put that hay in a slow feeder net. Okay. There are slow feeders that you can hang in a stall. There are slow feeder nets that you can go throw out over a bale. I mean, there's lots of really good options out there now for slow feeder nets. And when I say slow feeder net, what I'm talking about is a hay net that has really small holes in it. So that horse has to really work and pick at that hay in order to get the hay out and eat it. So the more effort that horse has to put forth to getting that hay out, the more time that they spend chewing while they're working on it. So it increases saliva production, which is also an added benefit because saliva helps buffer the stomach acid. And, you know, gastric ulcers are something that we're all concerned about. And, you know, the horse's natural defense against gastric ulcers is its saliva. That's its own natural buffering mechanism. And then the fourth thing that I would do, you know, if a horse has a history of colic, you know, I would probably feed them, I would supplement with like a daily metabolic pH balancer. So something like TurboMag, that will help improve how well that food moves through the digestive tract. It'll keep it a little bit more moist, that will, it'll draw water back into the digestive tract to help prevent that impaction. And then on top of that, it'll also help keep those horses drinking more willingly, even through those colder months. You know, I guess something else to keep in mind too is that there are some varieties of Bermuda grass hay that do have a little bit coarser stems. So if you can find maybe Tifton 85, that is a little bit more coarse stemmed than the coastal. But again, it's all going to go back to, you know, how early or how mature was it when it was harvested. You know, did that grower go by that, you know, every 3 week cutting time allotment, or did they go longer? And again, the best thing that you can do as a horse owner, if you are feeding coastal or, you know, Tifton, whatever you're feeding, alfalfa, I don't care what it is. I mean, I am a huge advocate for testing your hay and understanding what that hay is. So, I think, you know, maybe a lot of people don't understand what NDF is, and I gave you kind of a little glimpse into it here, but I have a feeling that maybe I should turn an entire podcast episode into interpreting a forage analysis and uncovering exactly what ADF and NDF is and what you should be looking for. So I'm going to make a personal note to do a forage analysis podcast in the future. Okay, let's go to question number two. This question is from Carrie. She says, I have a 3-year-old warm blood cross who's on about 15 acres of grassy pasture, and she holds her weight pretty well. The only time hay needs to be provided is towards the end of the fall and then through the winter. So my question is, does grassy pasture provide enough fiber in a horse's diet, or does something else such as hay, beet pulp, etc. need to be provided to meet fiber requirements? So to answer that question, because she has a second part to this, let's answer the first one. In short, yes, pasture does provide enough fiber, okay? That's assuming that you have enough pasture out in your pasture, enough grass out in your pasture, okay? So a lot of times what can happen is horses that are out on pasture, they're very selective, and so they graze only the grasses that they like, and they leave behind the things that they don't. So when we look out from a distance over a field, a lot of times pastures can look like there's a lot of grass out there. And when in reality, if you were to walk out into that field and look from the top down, you might notice that there are certain parts of the pasture that actually are really, really overgrazed, and then other areas where it seems like the horse hasn't touched it. Well, if you leave that horse out there, guess what's going to happen? That horse is going to continue to graze on the new growth of those grasses that they really like, and they're going to continue to avoid the other grass because now as it grows, it gets more mature and less tasty, okay? So just make it a habit of walking out into your pasture and looking down from the top, okay? Not from the side at a distance, because from the side, you know, 50 yards away, your pastures are probably going to look pretty darn good. But a lot of times when you walk out in the middle of them and look down towards your feet and look from that top, you know, if you're starting to see bare ground in areas, that's a pretty good red sign, red flag that, you know, that those pastures might be getting a little bit overgrazed. And so if you are in a situation where your pastures are a bit overgrazed, then it's possible that that horse is not getting enough fiber, not taking in enough dry matter content. Okay, so dry matter is really the basis of what you want to consider. And when I say dry matter content, it's all of the food that horse takes in on a daily basis. So that includes your pasture, that would include any hay that you might be supplementing with, and that would also include any grain or feed that you might be feeding, okay? So a good rule of thumb is to make sure that horse is eating at least 2% of their body weight per day. So if you have a 1,000-pound horse, they would need to be taking in 20 pounds per day of dry matter. And you know, if you're a little bit concerned about your pasture quality, or if you're not sure how to assess, you know, how much grazable material is left, your local extension agent, they should be able to come out and look at your pastures, or state range specialist. You know, there's definitely somebody within the university systems and the extension systems that are really good at assessing range condition or pasture condition. And they can kind of give you some guidance as far as, you know, whether or not you're overgrazing or undergrazing, or, you know, if you have more room for stocking capacity, because that is going to vary drastically from state to state, from region to region, from climate to climate. So, you know, the amount of acres that it takes to run one horse in West Texas or New Mexico is going to be radically different than the number of acres that it takes to run, you know, a horse in Florida or South Carolina. So just make sure that you kind of understand what your area is and what you should be dealing with. I'm not entirely sure where you're from, Carrie, so I can't give you too many more details outside of that. But if it is decided that there's plenty of pasture out there and that horse is able to eat, you know, basically 24/7 access, yes, they would certainly be getting all of the fiber that they need from that pasture. And I wouldn't worry too much about having to supplement any hay or beet pulp unless it's determined that there's not enough pasture actually out there for them to be taking in that you know, 20 pounds per day dry matter. Now, Carrie's second question was, if I'm feeding a vitamin and mineral supplement, do I also have to supplement with an amino acid supplement? She says her horse is currently only getting about half a quart of soaked Timothy pellets, and then she's putting a vitamin and mineral supplement on top of that. So a lot of things are actually going to come into play on that as far as, you know, whether or not you need an amino acid supplement. You might take a look at your vitamin and mineral supplement and see if there are any amino acids that are already guaranteed in it. A lot of times, you know, if you're using a diet balancer, a lot of diet balancers do have amino acids guaranteed, you know, specifically lysine. That's going to be your most important. You definitely want to look for that. And then if the horse is on good quality hay, so if, you know, if the pasture is good quality, plus you're supplementing with those Timothy pellets, you know, unless that horse is in just really, really intense work, you're probably going to be okay on your amino acids. You know, if, let's say you're riding that horse every day, you're working that horse really hard, and you need to increase or improve the recovery time between workouts, that's a situation where I would go ahead and add an amino acid supplement back on top. If you're really trying to support muscle development, really trying to support top line, building that top line, and you're working those horses and, you know, you're doing all of the, you know, the training and mechanics that's required to get all of those things, an amino acid supplement is a really good addition to put on top of that. The other time that I might use an amino acid supplement would be for growing horses, because those horses' amino acid requirements are so high. And especially if you've got growing horses and you're not feeding alfalfa, like if you're just feeding grass hay to your growing horses, you could run into a situation where you're a little bit short on your amino acid profile, or your ratios might just be a little bit out of balance. So I do like to use an amino acid supplement on growing horses. And then I also like to use it on pregnant mares. So especially if you've got pregnant mares and they're in like their third trimester, or during lactation, if you're not feeding alfalfa, or if you're not providing a grain that already has an amino acid profile built into it, I would certainly lean on adding an amino acid supplement. And you know, the personal go-to for me, the one I like to use is it's a pelleted supplement called Competitive Edge. I like it because it actually guarantees the full spectrum of essential amino acids. It is safe for horses that are dealing with sugar sensitivities. Okay, so it's under that 12% non-structural carbohydrate content, so very low in starches and sugars. And then it also has a little bit of some prebiotic support to it. So Competitive Edge is definitely the direction that I typically go there. All right, the third listener question comes from Rensky. I really like that name. All right, so she says, assuming that you have healthy horses, in my case, a warm blood and light work, Welsh cob and light work, and two Shetland ponies that sometimes accompany us on trail rides, but mostly they're just field ponies. Okay, so these horses are on 24/7 free choice forage. Depending on the season, they either get grass, hay, or a combination of both. They're supplied with the recommended amount of a diet balancer. And so the question is, would you recommend also feeding one or more of the supplements that you've talked about in the podcast, such as probiotics, plasma, etc.? I'm looking to supply my horses with the best feed, but I don't want to waste my money on supplements that they don't need. Okay, I really like that question. Honestly, I think that's a question that goes across everybody's mind, because you can get on Google, you can get on Facebook forums, you can listen to podcasts, and you can just be inundated with all of this information, all of this knowledge about technologies and supplements and things that are available, and they all sound fantastic. But at the end of the day, I think a lot of people go, okay, but does my horse really need that? So in this situation, to answer her simply, I would say no, they don't need anything else in addition to what she's doing. So she has them on good quality forage. She's giving them plenty of it. She has them on an appropriate diet balancer, meaning they're getting the appropriate levels of vitamins and minerals based on the horse's weight. So in that situation, and then also I'm assuming that she's got the appropriate level of salt in the diet as well, or that there's some a high level of salt built into the diet balancer. So as long as you have diet balancer, plenty of forage, and salt, I mean, there's honestly not much more that you have to do to keep that horse physically healthy, unless there are specific concerns for that horse. Okay, so let's go through some examples. Let's say one of them develops diarrhea or loose stool, or when she goes to load them in the trailer or take them somewhere, you know, maybe they get that loose stool or diarrhea. In that situation, I might add a probiotic into the diet. Okay. Probiotics can actually kind of help reset that microbial balance in the hind gut. Ideally, I like to see probiotics used in combination with a prebiotic. So that's why I like ADR. The ADR is available in both a paste or a powder, depending on the situation that you need it for. But the reason I like that product is because it has a mega dose probiotic, but it also has the supporting prebiotic that goes along with it to help support that resident microbial population within the horse. So that would be a situation where I would use a probiotic or a prebiotic. Let's say that one or more of those horses is having, you know, a loss of body condition or is really starting to drop on their top line. Okay, in that situation, then I might recommend that she introduce a fat supplement or an amino acid supplement. So, you know, like I mentioned before, Competitive Edge would be a really good amino acid supplement that could go back in and support some of that top line health. You know, if you just want to get fat calories into a horse, so let's say that horse is losing body condition and you just want to get calories in them, you know, I would lean on something like either Shine, which is a 99% fat, okay? So it's a liquid top dress, or you could go with something like Fish Oil Factor. So that's a 30% fat. I like Fish Oil Factor because it also comes with all of those really beneficial anti-inflammatory omega-3s. So from, you know, EPA and DHA are really good forms of omega-3s that every horse can benefit from. So if I have a horse, maybe two, that has a dull hair coat, okay, a fat supplement can be really beneficial for those. So if you're just wanting to kind of shine your horses up, get that coat looking really glossy, you know, get those dapples to pop out, you know, using something like fish oil factor. And then I would also make sure that the diet balancer that is being used contains organic forms of trace minerals. So those are I've talked about this before, but just as a reminder, the trace minerals that I like to see, if you look at the ingredients list, you would find them bound to a specific amino acid. So for example, zinc would be bound to methionine, which is an amino acid, or copper would be bound to lysine. And so in the ingredients list, those would be written as zinc methionine complex and copper lysine complex. Okay. Those are really good forms. I've just had so much success using those particular forms of trace minerals in getting those horses to really get a ton of dimension in their coat color, you know, to really dapple, to really pop, to just really get that depth in the coat color that people want to see. So I would definitely look at that diet balancer, check the ingredients, you know, make sure that those are the main sources for the trace minerals. I would generally kind of try to avoid backfilling with a lot of inorganics. Okay. Let's see. Another situation where I might recommend a supplement would be, let's say that one of the horses is all of a sudden really just acting grumpy or irritable. Their attitude has just really gone downhill. Maybe they get a little bit girthy or a little bit flinchy under their belly, especially towards their flank area. Those are usually some signs that that horse is dealing with some digestive distress. That could be stomach ulcers. That could be hindgut dysbiosis. That could be early signs of leaky gut syndrome. There's a lot of things that those symptoms could be, but I generally would start with something like plasma, because there is research showing that plasma is beneficial and effective at preventing gastric ulcers. There's also research showing that plasma is effective at supporting the tight junctions, which would then help prevent leaky gut. You know, the other thing I might consider in that situation would be maybe running those horses through like the 21-day hindgut program. So, you know, the hindgut just, it controls so much. You know, the bacteria and the microbes in there are just responsible for so much. You know, there's the connection between the gut-brain axis. So the health of the gut directly affects the brain, irritability, emotions. You know, the gut is responsible for 70% of the immune system. So there's just so many impactful things that happen within the gut. And when I say gut, I mean the hindgut, the microbial environment, that microflora is so important that a lot of times if you can go in with like the 21-day hindgut program, a lot of times you can kind of, I know it's probably not the right word or term to use, but I kind of say it helps reset the gut. It's a terribly non-scientific term, but it seems to be something that horse owners resonate with. But it is almost like hitting that reset button for the horse and kind of getting that microbial environment jump started again to help it function the way that it's intended to function. Let's see, what other supplements might I use? Well, like I mentioned before, TurboMag is one. So a metabolic pH balancer is really beneficial in the winter. You know, like I said, if horses are not drinking well, also in the summertime when horses are sweating a lot, okay, those are times where the horse can get a little bit dehydrated. And a metabolic pH balancer will keep them drinking. It'll keep the cells in their body hydrated. And it'll also help keep that digestive moving along the intestines a little bit more freely, so there's less chance of an impaction colic. And then I guess the one other time I might recommend a supplement in this situation would be, let's say that these horses are at a time of the year where they don't have pasture. It's gone dormant and they're on grass hay only. And let's say that, you know, that grass hay was cut a little bit late or a little bit mature. That would mean then that grass hay could have a high level of NDF or have a high level of indigestible fiber, which would mean that that's, you know, hard for that horse to break down. They can't break down that hay very well. So, You know, that's actually one reason that a horse can develop hay belly. There's a lot of reasons why a horse can kind of get that big hay belly look, but one of the most common is when you're feeding a grass hay that has a high NDF or a high indigestible component to it. Okay, so if I've got someone who's got horses in that situation, I will tell them to put Transform DSI as a supplement that I use. I tell them just put that on top of the normal diet, get that into them daily. And there are specific prebiotics and probiotics that are in Transform DSI, along with some enzymes that will actually help break that fiber down and help that horse digest that hay a little bit more fully. So I think, you know, off the top of my head, those are just some of the different situations that I would look for or be considerate of on, you know, for those horses where you might want to add a supplement other than just your normal diet balancer. Okay. So let's see, I think there's a part two to that. So part two. Do you have any recommendations regarding turnout management? So my horses recently moved and are now turned out 24/7 on 6 acres with plenty of shelters. I worry about my Shetland ponies and cob getting laminitis. They've never suffered from this before though. I'm considering either strip grazing in the spring months or using a grazing muzzle for them. Any tips on managing their feed intake while still supplying them with enough space and grazing? All right, that also is a great question, and definitely, she's definitely going along the right lines. Laminitis is by far the biggest concern in this situation, and I would say that a grazing muzzle is probably the easiest or simplest option. I would make sure if anyone has horses that are prone to developing laminitis, and their only option is to have them out on green grass, I would make a habit of monitoring their feet daily. Okay. So as an owner, you know, catch your horses, brush them off, and make a habit of feeling the front of their hoof wall on a daily basis. And so basically what you can do is just take the backs of your fingers and kind of pat them along the front of the hoof. And after a while, you'll get a sense of what normal is. Okay. And when I say normal, I'm talking about you're feeling for temperature, you're feeling for heat. Okay. So if you all of a sudden, you know, one day notice that there's a lot of heat in that hoof, that the hoof feels hotter than normal, okay, that should be a really big red flag for you that you could have some laminitis starting to develop. Another thing you can do is, you know, get really familiar with feeling the digital pulse in your horse, okay? And if you notice that there's a really strong or really surging pulse going to your horse's feet, that again is also a really big sign for laminitis. I'm sure that there are probably thousands of YouTube videos out there that will teach you, you know, how to assess the digital pulse of a horse. So maybe hop on Google or whatever your favorite search engine is and take a look at that. But I would say, you know, a grazing muzzle is probably the best option. You know, strip grazing isn't a bad option either. So basically that would just be, you know, limiting to a certain area of the pasture and then forcing those horses, you know, to graze that area before moving them to a next. The only problem with that one is, you know, it never takes them off of that pasture. Like they're always getting access to green pasture, you know, 24/7. What you might have to do is maybe create like a sacrifice area where you set up some panels and basically make kind of a penned area and you alternate, you know, how much time of the day they actually do get to graze. So, you know, maybe you bring them in late afternoon, keep them penned up through most of the evening, and then go out really early morning, turn them out, let them maybe, you know, graze up until noon or something, bring them back in. I mean, whatever the rotation is, but you would then offer hay to them when they're in that dry lot situation. So you're not necessarily restricting how much total intake they get in a day. You're just trying to manage how much of what they eat contains those high levels of sugar. And then again, just as a reminder, make sure that, you know, you pay special attention to that sugar content and those horses, not only in the spring, but also in the fall, because you can get kind of a resurgence or of growth and sugar accumulation in the fall months that a lot of times people kind of forget about. So spring and fall are definitely the kind of high points for horses when you are dealing with laminitis. And I did go into pretty good detail in a previous episode. I think it was episode 37. No, what am I? I'm on 37 right now. Actually, I think it was the last episode. I think it was episode 36. It was discussing the dangers, certain nutritional dangers that you can have in horses. And one of the things that I talked about is green grass itself. And so I did go into a little bit more detail about, you know, how you can manage those horses when you have them out on green grass. So anybody wants more information on that, definitely check out the previous episode. Okay, with that, I think that's a wrap for today. Again, I appreciate you guys all sending these questions. I will continue to get to them, I promise. If your question hasn't been answered, it's either because it probably is worth an entire episode of its own, or it's because I'm trying to pair it with other questions that are at least somewhat similar in nature so that I can make a more succinct episode for you guys. But I am diligently trying to get those all put together. And then I'm also slating some expert guest episodes. So I'm kind of getting those scheduled, getting my guests lined up and getting my head wrapped around, you know, who those are going to be, when those are going to air, and getting that all in place. So I'm really excited about the future of Feed Room Chemist. I appreciate all of the support I've gotten from you guys. Again, if you get the chance, please, you know, share this podcast with your friends and let people know that it is out there and that it is available. And please send me questions and send me feedback. I would love to hear from you. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Feed Room Chemist. If you like what you hear, be sure to share with your friends, post to social media, or give us a review. And as Winston Churchill used to say, no hour of life is wasted that is spent in the saddle. So go saddle up.